This is 103 and a half FM, WFYR Chicago. It's 10 o'clock in the Windy City and time for Straight Talk with Bruce Dumont.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Bruce Dumont, and this is Straight Talk. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We're during the next 90 minutes. You'll have an opportunity to hear from the two major Democratic and Republican candidates for mayor of the city of Chicago, Harold Washington and Bernard Epton. Each candidate will be with us for 45 minutes, during which time I will question them, and you will also have an opportunity to question them by giving us a call at 591-4600. That's 591-4600 if you wish to question either Mr. Epton or Mr. Washington as the program unfolds this evening. During our first 45 minutes tonight, we are joined by the Democratic candidate for Mayor of Chicago, Harold Washington. Mr. Washington, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
It's a pleasure being with you, Bruce. Thank you for inviting me.
I'd like to begin by talking a little bit about Mike Royko's column today in the Sun-Times. He says that if you lose Tuesday, you have yourself to blame because you have failed to effectively present your case to the city's lakefront wards. As you look back on the post-primary campaign, is there anything that you would have done differently?
Not really, no. One can always argue readjusting priorities. But in terms of emphasis, which is what a campaign is all about, and in terms of marshaling forces around an emphasis, I would say no. There would be no change in what we have done, period. I think we handled it, if I may say, with aplomb and, shall we say, a high degree of understanding of the city and its makeup and its problems. Superimposed, of course, on that is the political situation that we were confronted with.
Every campaign has peaks and valleys. What's been the high point and low point of the campaign for you personally?
For me, it was one day this week. The days are running together. It was Tuesday and Wednesday when my long friend and one of my chief aides, Clarence McLean, had a serious automobile accident in which he shattered his right knee almost beyond repair, and he was under extreme surgery and is now in intense care. Which was just sort of took the bottom out of not just me, but all who knew him and worked with him. And he was sort of a focal point for this campaign, at least insofar as my scheduling and all of the multitudinous things one must do to have a scheduling. And also on the same day, I thought I was getting a little bit of the flu. So it was a low point for me in terms of morale and maybe physical stamina.
Was that the day you popped off at the student at Northeastern?
That was the day. And I don't equate the two, and I don't make an excuse for the popping off, but it was a series of events which I think would have tested the patience of Job, and I'm not Job. I'm not a machine. I'm not an automaton, and I'm just like everyone else. I bleed, and I'm like every other man. If you scratch me too hard, you got a problem. But it all came a cropper, and superimposed on that was this just abominable mess that was being circulated, which was the low point in the campaign so far as I was concerned. It all came a cropper in my, shall we say, split-second outburst.
What's been the high point of the campaign?
Well, two, really. In the first part of the campaign, I think during the last week in the primary, when it was obvious and clearly that the campaign, to anyone who wanted to look at it, had taken hold and was just moving beyond anybody's ability to stop, including the candidate, that was strictly a high point. It was exhilarative. Second high point has come within the last 2 days when we've registered the same kind of an excessive almost glee and exhilaration that we see in the eyes and in the gestures and in the responses of people and the tremendous number of volunteers who are just sort of breaking down the doors to get into this campaign. So I have been motivated in both situations to the highest by the response of people rather than any personal sort of a thing. This is really what it's all about, to see people aware and knowledgeable and concerned about their city, their government, and the people in it. It's got to be a high point.
You have said throughout the campaign, and it started with your announcement back several months ago, that you wanted to be a mayor for all Chicago, yet there have been some incidents which would indicate that there are those in the city who are still not convinced that Harold Washington could be the leader for them. How are you going to go about, if you are successful, alleviating the fears that many Chicago white voters have about your election and how the city might change? How are you going to reach out to those people? I mean, how would you reach out to them tonight? We've got 48 hours before the polls.
First of all, I think we have to keep comparisons before us because we are running against each other. We have tried all parts of the city, and we have documented where we've been. My opponent has not tried in one significant part of the city. He hasn't even been in the west and south side of the black section. He hasn't touched it. That should tell anybody listening what this is all about. How can you govern a city when you just eschew totally 40% of the population? We haven't done that. We have tried. There have been impediments to our attempts. Even in the Northwest sector, we had been there three times during the general election prior to that unfortunate incident, which I won't dwell on. The canard that we had not done so simply wasn't true. We have no doubt that that was programming triggered by the opposition and designed to prevent us from continuing what we were doing in the Northwest sector, which was to be, shall we say, open the doors, and people were opening those doors so we could come in and talk, and we felt good about it. How can we resolve this problem? By doing the same thing I've been doing since day one. Announce that there is a problem, submit categorically that we're going to be about the business of trying to resolve the problem, not through preaching and all that sort of stuff, by programming, by communication, by consultation, by seeking advice, by opening government up and inviting people in of their own choices in the neighborhoods and the institutions. In other words, go about the business of governing. Talk about the business of governing, and so do it that people understand clearly, if they want to listen, and most people do, that you're serious about what you say. You know, a lot of these problems could have been resolved if people had just looked at my public career, and they would see in sharp relief the kind of fellow I am. I put coalitions together that people thought were impossible. I've got legislation passed through overwhelming odds and brought people together to do it that just were astound others. In other words, I'm going to continue to try to bring the city together by dealing with the problems of the city which people want resolved.
You alluded to the unfortunate incident at St. Paschal's on Palm Sunday, and you said that you don't want to dwell on it. What about two television commercials that are currently running? One is the Pledge to Allegiance spot in which the incident at St. Paschal's is intercut with young children giving the pledge, and also the spot which is even newer than that, and that's the photographs of the Kennedy assassination, the assassination of Dr. King, and a variety of other significant events that have taken place in this country. Using that footage of what you describe as an unfortunate incident, is that not just keeping that incident and the memories of that incident alive?
No. What has happened is you've juxtaposed a concept, a theory, and a man of excellence and good, which everybody admits it, with the opposite of it. And I think what the point is, it doesn't have to be this way. Why not make it this way? This is the kind of balance, shall we say, ad which is educational, which is uplifting, and which if people look at it with a non-jaundiced eye, I have to say, yeah, the juxtaposition points the way. And so it's not abrasive. It's not eliciting the worst fears and attitudes of people, but trying to point people in the direction of a better world. How else could you illustrate for people unity and togetherness than by portraying Dr. Martin Luther King, whether it's his voice, his picture, something he's done, a bill he's passed. I mean, it's just startlingly shocking to anyone who looked at it. And the idea behind it is, why do we have to do that when it's so easy to do that? No, I think that would pass muster as sound, sensible, decent campaigning on a higher level.
Let's, since I brought up the subject of the television commercials, this has been a campaign that television commercials have been discussed frequently, as they were in the primary campaign. You have been critical of the Epton Media effort and its use of the term "before it's too late," which you feel is a racist slogan. How would you respond to those who feel that during the primary campaign, when you said it's our turn, that also might be viewed by some as being an appeal to race, strictly for racial reasons?
That statement was taken out of context in a 45-minute speech tracing the whole political powerlessness of black people in this country. And it is known, it's documented, everybody in this city knows that blacks are not treated fairly. I mean, that's just a given. And everybody also knows, or should know, that notwithstanding that, our communities have supported the Democratic Party candidates without wavering. For example, I ran for mayor in 1977. I didn't care in my community. I got 35% of the vote. And I think I'm the best thing going since Campbell's soup on the shelf. But my community voted for Blondie. So that's a clear, sharp illustration of where we stand in terms of how we vote. Black people don't vote negatively. They vote positively. They want things to happen. It doesn't mean we don't have our share of nuts. I'm talking about the main thrust that overwhelms everything. The ethos of a people, the black people, is positive, fair, open, share, equality. That's our thrust. I laid all that out. And then said, but it hasn't worked for us. No matter whom we put in there, they turn around and shaft us. I don't want to go through the examples. She's going, you know. They're just abounding. And I said, well, perhaps it's time for us to turn this thing around. Put one of our own on a positive level and move forward. Now, that's not the same thing as someone saying, well, because you're black, we're not going to let you do it. That's a tremendously different thing. They're just like apples and oranges. You can't compare them. They're just incomparable situations. Now, I'm not trying to say it's all goody-goody over here and bad, bad, bad over here. So you just can't compare it. We haven't done that at all. Now, the slogan, before it's too late, wasn't coined by John Deardorff, although one would think it would come from the scullery mind. It was coined in the Yorty Bradley camp. And it was ground in stone as to what it meant. It was known throughout the trade what it meant. Why, of all slogans, would John Deardorff pull that one out of mothballs and plant it here in Chicago, knowing what it would elicit? It was clearly a call to the baser attitudes of some people in reference to race. No question about it. And not only that, one other thing I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
Really forgot, Bruce. One of the papers took that statement I made out of context, our turn, took a picture of me waving at crowds, open palm, happy, and made it appear as though this is a thunderous statement from Mount Olympus about the attitude of Harold Washington. Totally and completely programmed. I'll give you the paper sometime. Perhaps you can help me discipline that kind of thing going on here in Chicago.
Insofar as things being taken out of context, and your description would indicate that in that particular case it was. Knowing that, and knowing the way in which certain phrases or sentences can be abused in the media, I'd like to hear your feeling and reason for using the term race war several weeks ago, because you were addressing Lutheran ministers in looking at the complete statement of what you said. I think I know what you meant that night. That day, I should say. However, as a politician who has been around the block a long, long time, you had to know that the media might have misplayed that and might have taken it out of context, which some have.
Therein lies the rub. You put the onus of ultimate good judgment on me. It doesn't belong on me. You weren't there. The Lutheran, but you have come to the right conclusion. The Lutheran ministers asked me to talk about unity. They listened to it. When this was taken out of context and used, the Lutheran ministers, many of them came forward and said, that's not true. That's not what was meant. It was totally and completely taken out of context. It is bad, bad, bad.
What was meant? Let's clear the air.
Well, in the first place, the question of race war is kind of muddy as to how it was used at all. But what we were trying to do, but let me get to the media. Here are reporters listening to this whole speech. What are they doing sitting there? Waiting for one little phrase to put a headline on, or are they going to take the whole total message and portray that to the public? Is it the function and role of the media to do that, to nitpick with little fine nuances to such a way that they can play games with people's minds? Or should a reporter sit there and get the whole total picture? After all, I like to think that I paint word pictures for people. Maybe that's what I confuse with loquaciousness. I try to paint word pictures so that someone will get an impression from the overall statement I'm talking about. And here's a reporter takes something totally out of context, holds it up there, skews the whole business. No, you pose too tough a burden on one who feels that he is not just a politician, but a person who likes to inform and, in a sense, if I may say so, educate. And I like to express myself openly and fairly, and I would hope that people listening would just not do that. I've lost your question. I got carried away.
No, the question was, in if you had a chance to do it again. I think a couple of weeks ago on Walter Jacobson's program, Al Raby said that perhaps that was an unfortunate
Let me make it very clear now. If Al Raby said that, he was out of line. Now, I don't need my campaign manager to edit my thoughts. And he's probably just as much a victim of that skewed thinking as some reporters are. And I meant what I said. I said what I meant. I do it again, speaking to this august group of people who are deeply concerned about a problem. They wanted to see some scenarios which would flow from Mr. Epton's statement, and I was painting them within the context.
Is it true that Al is no longer
he's with our campaign, but I want to make that clear.
Okay.
No one has to interpret what I say for me. I do it myself and take the results of it. My campaign manager, anybody else.
The last time you were on this program and we spoke, which was right before the first pre-primary debate, I asked if the attention to your past income tax problems had received more or less coverage than you had expected. You knew that that was going to come out when announced for mayor, and you said at that particular time that you thought that it was about what you had expected. There was a little brouhaha about it, but there was not a great deal of exposure on it. What about the attention to the issue since the primary? Has that surprised you, that there's been so much more coverage of it?
First of all, those are things that happened 15 years ago. We've admitted our mistake. I don't deny that. I don't get around it. I think the punishment I received was inordinate, but irrespective of that, I was wrong, and I've made that clear. No, I have no right to object to the use of that as a area of criticism. I made it clear. What disturbs me is taking it out of context. For example, I don't want to be called a felon. I'm not a felon. Committed a misdemeanor, and a lawyer knows the difference. My opponent is a lawyer, but he's got literature out calling me a felon. That's libel. I don't want to say I was disbarred when I was suspended. That's like being fired or laid off for a few days. I mean, the average working person can understand that. No, the discussion of it doesn't bother me as long as the facts are clear. Another thing that disturbs me is this charge that taxes weren't filed for 19 years. Totally untrue. Denied categorically, no proof of it from any place. And what has in effect happened is I've been found guilty of something without any proof of it. And it goes on and on and on. The discussion of phase.
Did you challenge the U.S. attorney
on the spot
at the time he said it?
It's in the transcript. On the spot, he was challenged, denied. No evidence elicited, none forthcoming, no probative evidence, no files in the IRS for me or anybody else back that far. So what you have found here is a person who makes a charge through a speculative statement, and all at once, I'm guilty of something that hasn't been indicted for. Do you believe that the federal government would have indicted me for a year when I failed to file and didn't even owe a penny, and not have filed, indicted me for years like that? If it were true, it just wouldn't happen. Common sense dictates it wouldn't. And that thing is plaguing me, and that's one of the abuses of it. But let me get back to your question. I have no objection to voters or opponents making criticism of my past conduct, as long as it's valid, and that's valid. On the other hand, I must confess to you that it disturbs me greatly. That the press has not assiduously pursued my opponent relative to his manifest conflict of interest while he was a member of the General Assembly.
Are they lazy, do you think?
The reporters?
Yeah.
Well, I would never call them that.
The reason I ask that is because Thursday night on my Inside Politics show, we were discussing this very thing, and during the debate between you and Mr. Epton, when Mr. Epton unleashed the charges against you, he held up, I don't know how many pages it was, but he held up the black book and he said, here it is, here's all the evidence. You have suggested that that Mr. Epton might have some conflict of interests. Do you feel that there was any obligation on the part of your campaign to provide some of this ammunition
First of all, holding up a black book is symbolic of something. It may have been a book with empty pages, a blank page. Nobody asked to see it. I mean, they never went through it. That kind of hocus
pocus. They weren't empty pages.
That kind of hocus pocus, dominocus is just foul play, but I can live with that. Scurrilous minds move along certain scurrilous paths, so you can deal with that. You don't even feel those things. I'm only saying that no one approached that thing with the same assiduousness that they approached my life. I mean, I've been investigated more than any other person in captivity. Nobody in the country has been through what I've been through. I've had people calling my ex-wife, they've been everywhere. They've scuttled up and down and slithered through the halls and gotten into my private business. I submit to you that, to the listening audience, I think we should pull a halt to this thing. You're not going to get public servants of any degree of talent and ability and commitment to be subjected to that sort of nitpicking into their private lives. It isn't healthy, it isn't wholesome, it isn't needed. It's just been a disturbing thing to what I've had to go through. And these scurrilous attacks with no foundation, I bet you every newspaper in this city, every TV station and some radios have spent thousands of dollars running down all these false leads that have been called in, and they come up with zeros, And in the process of doing so, one's reputation is sullied. And if it's sullied even mildly, it's unfortunate. This is the kind of scurrilous activity. I think we in Chicago should take a hard look at this campaign in terms of the conduct that was used. And I think we should be very careful about what we let and permit people to do. But basically, the press has a responsibility in this city that it didn't live up to in this campaign. They perpetrated some of this stuff. They gave voice to it. They got the victims of innuendos and false rumors. For example, I've been accused of not paying a water bill. I was a tenant. The landlord was responsible for the water. He so stated. You would read the ordinary reports like I'm a slum lord, and I don't own any property. That property was transferred not so 5 years ago. But if you read the current reports, it looks like I'm not paying real estate taxes. I'm not paying water bill. This kind of thing is disturbing.
Were the evictions, did that happen while you owned the property?
No, absolutely not. We had a piece of property which couldn't pay for itself. The area's red line, couldn't get mortgage money to rehab. Tenants couldn't get tenants. Income was low, paid for the billing out of our pockets. Didn't want slum property, so transferred it to an individual for nothing, who agreed to underwrite the encumbrances. He didn't do so, so I get slammed 5 years later with this kind of a junk.
Congressman, my constituency is waiting on the phone, so let us turn to them. Our guest this evening is Congressman Harold Washington, the Democratic candidate for mayor of the city of Chicago. 591-4600 is the telephone number. Good evening, Kevin. You're on the air with Congressman Washington.
Yes, I saw your commercial this evening, the one with the pictures of the KKK and Martin Luther King and John F. Kennedy. And I don't see how you can't say that that was a scurrilous type attack from you as yourself.
All right, let's let the congressman respond to that. Congressman Washington?
Well, I've already explained that your failure to see it is something I can't contend with. I think it made it very clear that...
But it goes to the general public's baser views. You're taking a few people who I think we should be all ashamed of the way they treated you in Mondale up there because it was disgusting. But I can tell you personally myself, I was spit on by black people downtown because I was wearing an Epton button. I don't consider those black people representative of all the blacks in the city. And as such, these whites should not be representative of all the Epton supporters.
Oh, I don't think anyone implied that those people were representative of all the Epton supporters. All the press did was portray what was there. We don't know who those people were. They had Epton signs and buttons. No, I don't think anyone, certainly neither you or I, Mr. Caller, conclude from that all the people who were around there making scurrilous remarks came out of Epton's camp. I mean, we're not going to say that. No one ever said that. You said you were spat upon. That's an incident that's private to you. I don't know whether it's true or false. Don't really care. Don't compare it to this. This was held up in public relief, not by me. I'm not the media. I didn't take the pictures. I didn't take the radio sound. So don't blame me for what happened, or don't blame me for having it portrayed. I didn't do that. What we tried to do is...
You can talk about Deardorff all you want to.
And I will talk about Deardorff all I want to.
That is one of the most disgusting commercials I've ever seen.
I beg your pardon?
It's one of the most disgusting commercials, and I've worked on several campaigns in several states.
What is one of the most disgusting? What is one of the most disgusting commercials?
Your commercial with the KKK and stuff.
Okay, I'll talk about Deardorff all I want to, and you talk about my commercial all you want to, and never the twain will meet.
What campaigns have you worked on, sir?
I worked on Senator Grassley's campaign in Iowa, and
so you are a Republican political activist.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you, Janice. Good evening. You're on Straight Talk with Congressman Washington.
Yes. Congressman Washington, I'd like to know, if you become mayor, will Chicago turn into another Gary, Indiana?
Oh, certainly not. Gary, Indiana is a one-industry town, steel. We began to lose our steel market 12, 15, 16, 18 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Birmingham, Toledo, Pittsburgh, Gary, and several other cities, being one-industry towns, began to lose their economies. They were almost pauper towns, rendered that by the fact that it simply couldn't feed upon itself. It lost its central business industry, which all were swirled around steel. Coincidentally, Mayor Hatcher was elected in 68, I think it was, and he inherited a bankrupt town. The town, because of the recession and other things, has not been able to diversify itself or broaden its economic base, and so you have a town which is dying on its hands. There is no correlation between Gary and Hatcher, no more so than there's a correlation between me and, can't think of one, but there's just no correlation there whatsoever. That city would have been the same situation as in now if you'd have had a white mayor, for example. But look at some cities. I think Chicago would be more like Los Angeles, more like in Atlanta. That would be a more apt comparison. Chicago has a varied economic base. It can go just so low. Even through mismanagement, they haven't been able to destroy this city. All it needs is good management, and we can compete. So to answer your question, no, it won't be like Gary.
Okay.
Janice, we've got to move on. Rick, good evening. You're next on Straight Talk with Harold Washington.
Thank you. Mr. Washington, from listening to your earlier comments, I understand you're rather concerned and upset about looking at the looks at your personal life. Nevertheless, I think part of the reason might be that there are unknowns about your background that people are interested in. I think generally over the years, candidates and mayors of Chicago have had a pretty open book as far as what their personal life, family life, and whatnot is all about. For example, today in the Tribune magazine, I just happened for the first time to realize that your marital status was divorced. I previously hadn't seen anything of this. I was just wondering, if you could tell me how many times you've been married, for example.
I've been married once and divorced once. Now, let me ask you, what candidates do you know something about? Name some people whose lives you know something about who are in public office. Name some.
Well, I said with Mayor Byrne, you knew...
What do you know about Mayor Byrne?
That's right.
What do you know about Mayor Byrne?
Well, the fact that she was married first to her early husband back in the 50s, and he died, and then she subsequently married Jay McMullen, that sort of thing.
Well, you don't know anything about Mayor Byrne. That's not saying anything about Mayor Byrne.
We know something about her background.
Rick, why is it important to you to know if Harold Washington has been married before and is divorced?
Because I think it's important that the people know something about the person, something personal, the biographical data. I think it's important because, for example, in this case, we're talking about something that kind of ties into one's philosophy as far as the importance of family life and that sort of thing.
Well, why would you make that statement? The President of the United States is divorced. Close to 50% of every marriage ends in divorce. Why is that such a significant issue to you in this campaign?
Because it was an unknown factor. I mean, as I was saying, generally in the mayors,
It was unknown because you had not read it elsewhere before. Anyone's trying to hide that. In fact, the last time we were on the show, you talked about that.
All right.
Okay, Rick, we've got to move on. I think you've made your point. You've shown your concern. Randall, good evening. You're on with Harold Washington.
Good evening. Mr. Washington, could you clear up a point for me? I understand that once you move into City Hall, you're going to remove all the elevator boxes and replace them with vines. Is that true?
What? Replace them with what?
With vines.
Vines? V-I-N-E-S?
I'm sorry?
I didn't understand your question, sir.
If you become mayor of the city of Chicago, when you get into City Hall, are you going to take out the elevators and replace them with vines?
You know what? I'm not I'm not even going to ask you why.
I don't think we have 3 million Tarzans in this city. Is that what you were talking about, Tarzan, wasn't you?
Good evening, Randall is gone. Sandra, good evening. You're on Straight Talk.
Yes, my husband works for the CETA program for 1 year now for the Department of Neighborhoods, and the program's supposed to end April 31st. Is he going to continue the program?
The program will be continued on a different guise of joint training programs. That's a federal program, federally funded. It will be continued under that guise. We're trying to expand it, seed it with more money, expand its facilities for training. There's a lot to be done in that area.
Yes, and also, the city owes my husband $800 for mileage. And if he gets elected, would he make sure that he gets his money?
Well, I don't have
that. That was mileage that was promised to him.
I don't have the facts on
don't
that.
Don't you
case.
Have a position paper on this?
I should have one. Unpaid bills by the Byrne administration. Yes, we'll get a paper on that, and then we'll try to do something with unpaid bills by the Byrne administration.
Sandra, thanks very much.
The previous caller should have heard that something about Mayor Byrne, unpaid bills in her background. He should know that.
Thank you very much.
Okay. George, good evening. You're on Straight Talk. Our guest this evening, Congressman Harold Washington, the Democratic candidate for mayor of the city of Chicago. In case you just tuned in, I'm Bruce Dumont. This is Straight Talk, coming to you from WFYR Radio in Chicago. Bernard Epton will be our guest starting in about 15 minutes. Good evening, George. Go ahead, please.
Good evening. Good evening, Congressman Washington.
Good evening, sir.
First of all, I'd like to ask you, earlier you made a comment that it is a proven fact.
Will some perceptive reporter say the state should go out of existence because it hasn't paid its bill or is not qualified to be a state? No, I don't. I think you've walked yourself into one of those cul-de-sacs, my friend, and you've answered your own question. I mean, if the state is broke, the state must either get additional revenue or the state must cut into the services it supplies its citizens. Both alternatives are onerous. But in a well-ordered society that's looking for interdependence and cooperation and building and satisfaction and peace and tranquility, one has to balance those things. And if money is called for, then it seems to me to be the responsibility of a responsible public servant to suggest that as best one can to the people who have to pay the money.
Okay, we've got to move on. Barbara, good evening. You're on Straight Talk with Harold Washington.
Yes, good evening. Concerning this incident that happened at St. Pascal's, there was no racial slurs being yelled out. It was only that they were calling him crook and things. It was not racial in any way.
Were you there?
No, but I know somebody who was.
Well, let me submit to you that you're incorrect.
On your commercial, they don't have the audio part of it, only the visual. Why is that?
Well, let's answer your question. You were not there, but yet and still you're telling me what was not said and what was said. I was there. I submit to you that it was unfortunate.
What you said about your past, that it wasn't your water bill and all this stuff.
Yeah, one thing.
Clients?
You load it up for bear. Let's take one thing
at a time. Just a minute, Barbara. Let's let Congressman Washington respond to the...
I'll respond to both, but one at a time. I was there. I know what was said. I'm not going to repeat it on the air. It was bad. Don't try to cover it up.
To be putting this on the air, aren't you making it more racial than Epton? You say that he's bringing out the racial things. You are.
I didn't create the incident.
Last night when you were on Channel 7, you said, I'm going to get back to my own people, meaning the black people on WXOL.
How do you know what I meant?
Because that's what you said.
No, that's
not. You said,
now
I've got to get back to WXOL and my people.
No, my people are the people in the listening audience. They're white, they're Latin, they're black.
Well, I wish sometime a white would get and listen to this WXOL. All they talk about is, Miguel, go out there and get out and vote. All the blacks vote for Washington. You are running it racially, not Epton.
I would like to
in every word, if I can just interject that the fact of getting out to vote is something that every committeeman, whether they are supporting Harold Washington or whether they're supporting Bernard Epton, both sides, and important to every side, is they want every single vote within their base to go out and support the candidacy.
But they are saying in WXOL, our people, let's make sure we win, meaning the blacks. Now, this is more racial than Epton. Epton is playing down the racial thing.
Well, let me answer.
Washington is playing it up.
I can't answer but one thing. Let me answer one statement you made.
All right.
I said I want to get back to my people, and you assumed I meant black people. Well, your assumption was incorrect. My people are the voters out there whom I was appealing to. My people are the people, white, black, Latin, otherwise, who are working in my camp. I would think that we could solve a lot of problems if you just don't jump to conclusions and be pushed around by a word which has its, you know, own meaning. If you'd asked me what I meant, I could have told you what I meant, and we could have gone on to something else.
Another thing I'm going to talk
about. Barbara, we've heard enough. We've got to move on. We've got to be fair, and we've got other people waiting. Thanks for your call. Dennis, good evening. You're on Straight Talk.
Good evening, Mr. Washington. I'm a supporter of yours from the Southwest side, and my question is, since the primary, why hasn't your campaign strategy been to try to get more white support? Reason being is because it seems to me like you have a very strong black support, but and that I think if you would have spent a lot more time trying to get more of the white voters on your side, because I think it's something that, you know, you have a lot of intelligence, and I think you come across as a very good speaker that...
All right, let's let him respond. I think he has the gist of your question.
No, we have tried, Mr. Caller, and tonight, for the seventh time, and we counted them, for the seventh time since the primary, we went into the far southwestern corridor. We've been there before, to Daly School and to other places, community, I've forgotten exact ones, but we logged seven appearances there. We didn't avoid going into neighborhoods. We went into the northwest sector, as I said before, three times before that unfortunate incident happened. And then we had to make an equation as to whether or not to continue to go, because we didn't want disturbances. We didn't welcome disturbances. And so that created a problem. So what I'm saying, Mr. Caller, is that we have done that. We've done it very carefully, and we wanted to get more into the northwest corridor, but it was just that the unfortunate incident might have been exacerbated, and we didn't want a trail of catcalls coming out of meetings. It was just unfortunate. But I repeat again, just so we do have a balanced picture of the whole situation, my opponent has not been in the west side or south side of Chicago at all during this entire campaign. And I think that question should be directed to him. No one can run this city who doesn't make an attempt to bring people together. I've said we will try to bring people together. We've tried to do so. I think we will succeed in doing so, but I'm running against an opponent, not myself. And so the same question, when he comes on today, should be asked of him.
Dennis, thanks very much. We move on to Bill. Good evening. You're on with Harold Washington.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I am at least as intellectual as everyone who is called tonight, and I know the issues probably better than everyone who is called tonight. And I know what Congressman Washington is going through, and, sir, I don't know what I can say to let you know how well I know what you must be going through. I've made calls for you. I'm working around the clock for you. And every time I make a call, I have to take a deep breath, you know, before I make the next call. Because of some of the things I hear. And, yeah, this, you can distort the issue however they... When I say they, I don't refer to a particular race or anything. I just refer to the small minds that have distorted the issues like this. But I don't think there's a person in the world that could pass through the fine-tooth comb that you have passed through and still be able to sit there and take more. And I just want you to know that you can count on me for the next 48 hours at least.
Okay. Bill, thanks very much. I'm going to end this call just because we have a very bad connection, but I'm going to give you an opportunity to elaborate on what he said, and that is the fact, you know, getting back to the pressure, to the constant challenges that you've been under, you know, since even before primary, but in a much, the intensity of the campaign has heated up considerably since, you know, the primary ended. What about relieving tension? You know, we talked at the beginning of the program about an incident last Thursday when you know, someone was screaming and yelling in your face, and you turned around and told them to go to hell. And I think anyone that's ever been through a campaign, or anyone listening to this program, if you're going through a screaming mob and someone is screaming in your face, perhaps most of the people listening to this program would like to also tell them to go to hell. But what about you at the end of a day? How do you unwind from the intensity of this campaign? I know you like to campaign, but you've got to unwind. How do you do it?
Oh, my tastes are Catholic, just like most red-blooded American men. You can't name anything. I like to shoot pool. I play chess. I like to watch TV. I like good conversation. I imbibe infrequently, but intensely. I read omnivorously. I'm a spectator sports fan. When I have a chance, I engage in extensive calisthenics. I do all the things that other people do when they want to relieve tension. But basically and fundamentally, I'm probably a reflective person. I like to read. I read tremendously. I read biography. I read history. I read the shop stuff. So most of my leisure time is taken up with catching up with my reading and that sort of thing. I write quite a bit. I'm chronicling this campaign. I would hope somebody would get the benefit out of it other than myself. And we'll leave something for posterity to mull over about the intensity of this campaign and my reflections on it. So I'm just like most people, and I'm also like most men. If you walk up and spit and shout into the average man's hand, you're going to have a problem. I'm the same way. I don't profess to be a machine. I don't want to be a machine. I'm a human being, and I have the same feelings that other people feel. But I'm also a man of, I think, of great equanimity. I've learned in the course of my lifetime that most things pass away, and so we just live through them by the minute.
You talked about spectator sports. This is one question that you've avoided during the entire campaign. Are you a Cubs fan or a Sox fan?
Well, as mayor of the city of Chicago,
walk that line.
As mayor of the city of Chicago, I should not only be a fan, I shall be an advocate for whatever sports team visit our city. But I would hope that somewhere along the line we would bring home some bacon. I mean, we're long-suffering people here, but I'm a deep dyed-in-the-wool, head-to-toe, hip-to-hip, unconverted Sox fan. I don't care if they lose every day. I'm going to root for them.
Okay. Dorothy, good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Congressman.
Good evening.
This is a meeting yesterday at the Belmont Hotel.
Yes.
And you talk about bringing people together.
Yeah.
I think one of the problems is that a lot of people don't want to be brought together. But I think that you're mistaking what people don't want to be brought together. The Daily World was handed out, and you're more acceptable to the communists than the Socialist Workers' Party is. You're more acceptable to gays than anyone is. And I'm not sure that...
According to whom, Dorothy? Who says that the congressman is more acceptable to communists?
The Daily World. It was being handed out at the meeting at the hotel yesterday. And they speak of him as the... he's going to become the first Afro-American mayor of Chicago. Gay Life, the opening paragraph says, a rousing standing ovation greeted mayoral candidate Harold Washington when he came to reaffirm his commitment to gay rights at a Greater Chicago Gay and Lesbian Democrats public forum.
Congressman Washington, you have laid out quite a bit. Congressman, we'll give you a chance to respond.
Oh, yes. I'm also endorsed by the Tribune, the Sun-Times, Chicago Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO, National Education Association, Chicago Women's Teachers Organization, Chicago Defender, on and on and on and on. I'm a Catholic man. I deal with people's problems. I deal with people's problems on a level on which they find them. I'm a civil rights libertarian to a fault. I will go to any ends to defend people's rights, and if I don't care who those people are. If in the process of defending people's rights, some people's ire is raised, then they're just their ire is raised. I resent very much the young lady assuming that I was in the category of any of the people who have supported me. I would suffice to say that I have tried to appeal to people's concerns and worked on those concerns. You got a lot of your callers have their knives out tonight.
I have one other comment.
Well, guess what? We're out of time, so I'm going to give the last word because we're nearing.
No, you know what? She'll probably say, Bruce, that you cut her off and didn't give her a fair chance. Let her ask her question.
Well, she's gone with the wind at the
moment. She's gone with the wind.
Last night at the American Indian Center, I was there observing your statements, and you talked about healing the city, and based on the intensity and the feel of the telephone callers, as you just said, many of whom had their knives out for you tonight. How are you going to go about healing the city? That's going to be a tough job whether you win or Bernard.
A lot of people think I can do it. For example, that Indian chief last night said two things which extolled me beyond my anybody's right to be extolled. He said, Chicago is a wounded city, he said. He said, Mr. Washington can heal that city. This is an Indian talking about wounded. You know what is listed in the minds of Indian peoples when you use the word wounded, and I'm not just talking about wounded knee. That moves on a psyche all its own. And for him to glorify me by saying I could heal the city is just, to me, a marvelous thing. Yes, we can help to heal the city. And we're going to do it by continuing to do the same things I've been talking about. We're going to deal with people's problems. We're going to be fair to people. Nobody's going to be pushed around. I can go on and on and on with it, but it's just that simple. We have a program. We have the ability to run the city council. We will go into the city council with a majority of council members on our side. We help elect most of them. We're going to elect some more on April 12th. My opponent can't claim that. He will be a puppet of the city council. He has no friends. He hasn't one member of his party. He doesn't know the council. He hasn't filed a transition report. Nobody thinks he's getting ready to move into government. He thinks that he, if perchance he wins, that people like Kelly at Kelly the Park District and Roman Puchinsky will help him transition into government. He couldn't even prevent a veto override of his bills.
He
said he only wanted a 4-year term. That's ludicrous. The man wants to play with city government like it's some toy of a rich man. He has no commitment to city government.
We are running out of time, and we're running over the equal commitment. But again, I want to ask you, Bernard Epton is going to be here in less than a minute and a half. What question would you like to ask him? Give me a short question that you would like to ask Bernard Epton.
Bernie, are you really serious about this? And if you are, why don't you do the things that people do in campaigns to indicate seriousness? Why don't you have a transition team? Why don't you indicate clearly to the people of the city how you're going to run the council? Why do you support the patronage system? You're a lawyer, and the court has said it's got to go. Why don't you come up with your conflict of interest information?
You've given me 8 questions.
I have hyphenated questions.
Congressman Harold Washington, the Democratic candidate for mayor, has been our guest this evening. Congressman, we thank you very much for joining us on Straight Talk. You've been on this program before. You promised that you'd be back as a candidate for mayor. We appreciate your showing up and being with us this evening on Straight Talk.
May I come back as mayor?
You are invited back next Sunday night if you choose, win or lose.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Congressman Harold Washington, our guest. I am Bruce Dumont. This is Straight Talk. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with our guest, Bernard Epton.
From 103.5 WFYR, I'm Marietta Makovich, and here's what's happening. The Chicago Dance Medium presents a unique blend of ballet, modern, and jazz in a free noontime concert tomorrow at the Daily Plaza. For details, call 939-0181. Find your pot of gold at the end of the rainbow by auditioning for the Glenview Theater Guild's production of Finian's Rainbow. Auditions are April 11th and 12th. For details, call 724-5670. Innovative ways of meeting the opposite sex is the topic of a lecture to be given April 15th before the Aware Singles Group. If you'd like to attend, call 777-1005. Wrigley Field moves to Oak Park as the Village Players present Bleacher Bums, now through April 23rd. For reservations, call 383-9829. And you can visit the Queen's Garden at Buckingham Palace through a film lecture at the Field Museum on April 17th. For more information, call 322-8854. You're listening to Straight Talk with Bruce Dumont, coming to you live from WFYR Chicago, 103.5 FM.
Thank you very much, Marietta. We are back, and joining us now is Bernard Epton, the Republican candidate for mayor of the city of Chicago. Mr. Epton, we thank you very much for joining us tonight on Straight Talk. I would like to begin by asking you basically the same question I asked Harold Washington about 45 minutes ago, and that is, as you look back on the campaign, is there anything that you would have done differently?
No, absolutely not. I would have preferred that the media had acted differently, but there's nothing that I would have done differently. Our platform, our program was well thought out from the very beginning to the very end. To a certain extent, we had to accelerate it somewhat because of the mayor's
decision to perhaps be a write-in, and that caused us to move our schedule up a little bit. But otherwise, everything went pretty much as we'd planned, and hopefully we will hit our peak certainly Monday or Tuesday.
During Mr. Washington's appearance, he also pointed to the media and felt that they didn't do the job that he thought they should have. So we have perhaps somewhat of a news event this evening that you two have agreed on a point.
Well, we do. I'm not sure just exactly who finds fault with what. I think probably my biggest complaint, separate and apart from the what I consider the lack of exposure, the fair exposure, and we have documented the time both on the radio and on TV, and of course we'll make our protests at the proper time. As far as the printed media, the reams of columns that he got compared to mine, we won't even mention the columnists, but separate and apart from what might be a ego trip or an unfair trip is the fact that despite attempts to avoid any racist campaign, the media has constantly interjected it. I don't recall, with rare exception, and you may be one of them, without someone bringing that question up and certainly causing me to answer, and I suspect the same may be true of Harold, Congressman Washington. I shouldn't call him Harold.
There are those that would suggest, however, that since most of your time has been spent on the southwest side and northwest side, and some of your statements several weeks ago in which you said that you're proud that you're white and statements of that nature, that in basically covering what you have said during the campaign, that in itself has added fuel to the issue of race.
You're taking it out of context, which is unusual for you, because when I said, for example, I'm proud I'm white, I said at the same token I could well understand that the pride that the black people have in a black candidate. I said there's no reason why they shouldn't, any more than I can deny being white and take pride in the fact that white people, I didn't say white people, I said that ethnics take pride in so that, again, I've never been quoted, I've never made the statement that I'm proud that I'm white. I certainly have indicated I can't hide my color. On the contrary, I think that I have made attempts, but reached out to my opponent to see if we could diffuse the issue even before the primary, when neither one of us knew who would be the winner, although I had a reasonable certainty at the Church of Good Shepherd. And you mentioned the fact that I concentrated in other areas. Nobody has mentioned the fact that I've visited the black areas at great length. I've been at 63rd and Cottage Grove. I've been at 54th and Woodlawn. I've been at 95th and Prairie.
Since the primary?
The only one that was before the primary was the Church of Good Shepherd. But since the primary, I've been to all of those areas. I've skipped none of them. Obviously, you go where you get the most votes, but My opponent has constantly alluded to the fact that I haven't been in the black area. I have the dates, the times, and the places, and the people that were with me. And in some of those areas, I wasn't too well received, although they were gracious. They didn't boo me, but they certainly weren't on my side.
Last week, you and I met when I was working on a television broadcast, and I gave to you racist material that was being circulated in the 25th Ward by Alderman Vito Marzullo's captains, and I called your attention to that. Have you spoken with Alderman Marzullo about that material?
No, I don't believe you gave it to me. I think you told me.
I showed it to you. That's correct.
You may have shown it to me. I won't quarrel with that. What I did do is immediately is I sent a statement. I released a statement. Not only did I at that time think it was scurrilous and something that wasn't even worth mentioning, that is, it would defeat the purpose by emphasizing it, I issued a statement, a written release to all of my campaign workers and to all of my offices, telling them not only that I didn't want any anonymous campaign literature distributed by any of my campaign workers or available in any of my campaign offices, I also indicated that if you notice or otherwise become aware of any anonymous campaign literature, you are directed to contact the Cook County State's Attorney's Office at 443-4319 and report any attempts to distribute such literature. Again, such literature is illegal and immoral and will not be tolerated in my campaign. I therefore will expect absolute compliance with this directive. And this was sent not only to my offices, but to every ward committeeman, both Republican and Democratic.
What about, you know, much has been said and written about the anti-black material that has been circulated, which you have, you know, denounced in as a result of that memorandum.
And prior to that.
Right, and prior to that. What about anti-Semitic literature? Has there been any disseminated that you are aware of against your candidacy?
Some has come in the mail, but shortly after both anti-Semitic and there were some certainly bigoted anti-black material that came. After a while, my staff instructed my secretary just to throw it in the wastebasket, so I never did see it. Originally, there was some anti-Semitic mail, but certainly not as much as there was against anti-black.
Because of the intensity of supporters of yours and Mr. Washington's, there are those that have said that regardless of who wins, it's going to be very, very tough for that mayor to bring this city together. Let us look ahead, and for the sake of this question, if you are elected Tuesday, how are you going, and can you be specific, what are you going to do to reach out to the black community and bring them in to make sure that they feel that they're part of this city?
Well, it will be extremely difficult, especially when you have people like Vernon Jarrett saying that the black people hate me. I happen to know that that isn't true, but of course he has license to say those things, and obviously only adds to the problem. As far as I'm concerned, as I've indicated before, black people will have certainly will have a place in my administration. I've asked several of them to be on my transition committee. Several of them there are. Even though my opponent keeps insisting that we have no such committee or no such papers, the fact is my transition committee, the initial individuals were announced long before he came out with his substantial list. A lot of names, we have what we call quality rather than quantity, and we're still in formation. We have several black individuals on that committee, and as a matter of fact, because at their own request, several of them asked that their names not be released until after the campaign. They are serving, and they're perfectly willing to serve, but because because of the fear that might be generated, some of them are family men, it's not personal fear, we have respected that and not announced them. So that, and I don't say this is any of Harold's doing, it's just a case of where, obviously, my workers have been beaten up. Nobody mentioned that except a small squib in the paper. There was one of my white supporters whose house was burned. She's asked not to make an issue out of it, and I probably, if she's not insured, will have to compensate her myself, which I'm glad to do. Your question, however, is a valid one.
Where did this take place, this specific incident? That's a rather serious revelation.
It certainly should have gotten some attention, although she was very much it was in Bridgeport. She was very much a lady, and she asked specifically, her house was burned to the ground. She has nothing, no clothes, no telephone, no nothing except a blank lot. She asked specifically that it not be raised, but the fact is it exists, and I would be very happy to give it to you privately. I don't think that she should be abused.
As someone who represented it in an integrated area for 14 years in the Illinois General Assembly, how do you personally react to the image that that many have of you, that you are surrounded by people who don't want anything to do with having a black live next door to them, have a black mayor, or who are racist in nature? And by asking that question, I don't mean to suggest that everyone that for Bernie Epton is that. But there are those who perhaps are going to vote for you for the wrong reason.
I agree, and I would add that they're not close to me specifically, but I do recognize that bigotry exists on both sides of the fence, and there are people who are going to vote for Harold for perhaps the wrong reason. I resent it very much. It disturbed me. As a matter of fact, a friend of long standing, a man that I respected and supported financially as well as asked him to be on transition, came back with the fact that I was a racist, that he was completely ashamed of our friendship, and I'm sorry that I lose people like that. It's astonishing that after...
Can you reveal that name to us?
I don't think it would do it again. You don't embarrass your friends, and although
Quentin Young publicly called you a racist. Is that who you're referring
to?
Yes,
yes. Dr. Young, who at a public meeting where several colleagues of mine and his were present, we discussed the situation, and at that time I indicated that I would like very much to have him serve on the transition team. And I asked others who are pledged to Harold Washington, I said, stay with Harold Washington. If you love this city, you'll help whoever wins. And yet he's been so effectively brainwashed by, it's kind of remarkable that a man with his intellect, knowing my background, knowing that what I've done in the black community and presently doing, and I don't expect any great credit for it. I'm fortunate that physically and financially I can help in those areas. But it shocks me when, and he's not the only one, I've gotten hate letters from people that have accused me of being a racist based upon what the media has printed.
Our guest this evening is Bernard Epton. I'm Bruce Dumont. This is Straight Talk. We're coming to you from WFYR Radio in Chicago. Our telephone number is 591-4600. If you have questions for Mr. Epton, do give us a call. We'll be turning to your calls in about 5 minutes. Mr. Epton, in recent days, Harold Washington has suggested that if you are elected, you will be a puppet. In fact, he has a television commercial suggesting that the power brokers of the city who have been in control for the last 4 years and many years before that, it's going to be the same old gang around City Hall. If you win Tuesday, do you expect to shake things up? And if so, where are you going to start?
Of course I do, and Harold knows me better, obviously. He's seeking to win the office, and I'm not sure that I blame him for making those charges, except that I do fault him because he knows they're false. No one has ever been able to use me. I was in the leadership for 4 years in Springfield, and I fought with Governor Thompson when I thought he was wrong. As far as I'm concerned, the city council is an independent legislative body. They're going to, matter of fact, I think he insults the blacks when he suggests that he will go in with a block of 20 or 26 or 22 black people. Just because they're black doesn't mean they're going to support Harold Washington.
What about department heads? What about John Donovan and Streets and Sanitation, Lenora Cartwright, Amanda Rudd, and a variety of other, you know, top, administration officials? Do they have to start sending out their resumes in a hurry once you get elected, or how are you going to go about deciding who stays and who has to jump ship?
Very simply. One, I said it from the very beginning. It started with Superintendent Brzezik. I asked everybody to stay on board, give me a chance to monitor their departments, see where they were effective, see where they were failing, and also my transition team has been working over at City Hall daily and reviewing where we could do a better job. I expect to at least give them the benefit of a discussion before they start sending out their resumes. Some of the present administration will remain. Some, I think, perhaps may be incompetent, but I'm a lawyer. I'm well aware of the Shachtman decree. As a matter of fact, long before it was the Buell decision came down, I indicated that hiring and firing would be based entirely upon ability, regardless of party affiliation. It's safe to assume that the next superintendent will come from within the ranks of the department itself. To the best of my understanding to date, Superintendent Brzezik has 5 deputies, all of whom are competent. One happens to be black. I think one is Hispanic. I'm not sure. I think one is Irish. I'm not sure what the other two are. But I don't really care what their color or their race or their origin is. I hope to be able to select from one of those deputies an individual who can step into the shoes of Superintendent Brzezik.
A couple of weeks ago, the issue of your past psychiatric consultation came up during the campaign, and you were pressed on it one night, and you popped off at the news media.
Why do you say I popped off at the news media? I think I responded to the question.
Well, you responded in a vociferous way. Well, and what I have heard is that as a result of that, now maybe these are people that wouldn't be prone to vote for you anyway, but they said, I don't know if Bernie Epton has the temperament to govern because he flies off the handle too quickly.
Well, that's very interesting. I would wonder how they feel about Congressman Washington's remarks to a student in a class. I don't think that was very temperate. On the other hand, I think when someone puts something in front of you and asks you if can you explain it? Have you ever seen your medical records, Bruce? Have you ever?
No, not close
either.
Up.
I never read it. In the hospital, you go in there, and the doctor writes down whatever they write down. And so that the first time I saw them was, one, I was shocked to see them, not that there was anything to conceal. And I answered all the questions very simply. I was astonished that they had them. As a matter of fact, they were obviously stolen. Not only were they stolen, I understand that there was a price offered by two TV individuals to obtain those records.
Who offered money for those records?
Two television.
Can you tell us who they are? I mean, that's a very serious charge.
Yes, it is. And
who was it?
Michael Reese Hospital is going to investigate it, and I don't think it belongs in this. As a matter of fact, I asked the hospital to wait until after the election because I didn't want anyone to think anything was being concealed.
And prosecution will be made against. My understanding is, according to a source, that Michael Reese knows exactly who on their staff released this information and that they will be prosecuted after the campaign.
Well,
is that true?
I don't know, but if your information is better than mine, if that's correct, that's the proper way. Obviously, it's a criminal act, but that does not alter the fact that I was perfectly willing to answer any questions. I had nothing to hide.
But news media people were willing to pay for that information?
I was told, and I suspect that that Michael Reese will have to track that down. I don't intend to pursue it. $1,000 apiece by two TV commentators.
Mr. Repton, the first time that you and I met was on February 11th, right before an interview on Channel 11, and you arrived at the studio. You were all alone. There was no fanfare. You almost had a forlorn look about you, your hat in hand. This afternoon, I was with you as you were mobbed by about 12,000 to 15,000 people out on the Harlem Avenue parade, and I must admit, as I was watching you today, I was thinking back to our first meeting, and I'm just wondering, with the world's media now recording your every word, can you possibly describe for us just the psychological metamorphosis that's happened to you in the last 2 months? It must be mind-boggling.
It is. I'm just as surprised and as shocked. Of course, I'm pleased, but I never envisioned when I sat with you, and you were one of the few individuals who took the time to discuss my candidacy, I never for a moment imagined that I would get the response throughout the city that I did. Obviously, there are some whose response may not be based upon the best reasons. But the fact is, I have tried to point out some positive aspects of my background, and you're right, it's mind-boggling. It's almost like the fountain of youth. I feel better than ever in this campaign. Obviously, the crowd rejuvenates you. I'm getting younger. My wife, I'm afraid, is getting a little bit older.
Let's turn to the telephone calls now, 591-4600, if you have questions or comments for Bernard Repton. Good evening, Dolores. You're on the air with Mr. Repton.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead.
Mr. Repton, I would like to ask you, why did and do you focus on Congressman Washington's past history about his tax problem? Failure to file, not pay. That's what it was, failure to file, and you emphasized it was failure to pay taxes.
I disagree with you.
All right, let's let him respond to the first thing.
I never for a moment, all my comments, all my literature, everything, never for a moment deviated from the truth. It was failure to file. That's all we ever stated. I never stated anything else. Some of the media made mistakes, but I never suggested that he failed to pay. I simply suggested and always said that he failed to file.
What about your commercials that refer to him as a convicted felon, which is inaccurate?
I never had a commercial. That again, Bruce, I don't know where you got that, but if you'll review my commercials and they're available to you, I never revert to him as a convicted felon.
Okay, and then there's another thing. We shouldn't dwell on the past. The past is behind us. And for example, as far as the past go, black people don't constantly grudge on the fact that we were enslaved by white people. We have forgotten that because it's in the past. And Congressman Washington's that was a personal thing. That has nothing to do with what he's going to do in City Hall.
Well, you see,
and I think that's a very small-minded person.
Well, that may be
something like that.
All right, in the first place, that may be that's certainly your opinion, you're entitled to it, but the fact is, we're not talking about the past procedure.
That is the past.
Well,
that is in the past.
All right, let's let him respond.
Let me finish. In the first place, all he talked about was 4 years. The court records show allegations of 19 years, in addition to which, we brought it up to the present. We're talking about 1982, where he failed to pay taxes on real estate taxes. These things aren't...
That's false also.
It's
right.
False? Well, we happen to have the court documents. We happen to have the
Mr. Epton, you're my house is split just like mine. I'm capable of lying. You are capable of lying. People are
not. I'm not capable of lying.
And then another thing, in one of your ads, on your television ads, you bypassed a black person to shake hands with a white person. That is on television. That is on film.
Dolores, there's no way that we're going to resolve that because there's no way we can prove that on radio. Strange, but video on radio just doesn't work. John, good evening. You're on the air.
Hello. Mr. Upton?
Yes.
I'm a union employee with the city.
Yes.
And Harold has indicated some things to promote civil service exams and such.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know your... I have another question. But if you do promote civil service exams, if you're in favor, I want to know, will they be tough enough to sort through and sift through to get qualified jurymen to do such things as maintaining proper traffic signal corners, police, fire alarms, and all more or less technical jobs?
Well, obviously, I don't know what type of exam you're talking about, but the point I've always made is that we will seek out only competent employees. As far as civil service or the personnel exam, I think they protect more incompetence than they produce competent. I think that... obviously, I'm well aware of the law, and when we talk about patronage, we're talking about hiring competent people for the particular jobs without regard to party affiliation. I have never suggested, I have no campaign funds, I don't intend to maintain any campaign, nobody will have to go out and work for me. The fact remains that as far as exams are concerned, they certainly, I want, as you do, competent people in city government. And that will be how I achieve that, whether it's by examination, whether it's by personnel code, or how, I don't know. But that's my objective.
John, thank you very much. A follow-up. Mr. Washington today has been suggesting that your pledge that you're only going to be a four-year mayor indicates that you're viewing the office as a toy, and because you're a millionaire, and that your heart really isn't in it.
Well, I think he's made a lot of innuendos. That doesn't make them true. The fact is, I happen to love this city of Chicago. I was worked very hard in the General Assembly, and I produced some good legislation as well as stopping some bad. I think 4 years, I don't think anybody should have a life tenure on the mayor of the city of Chicago, and I think in 4 years, the Lord willing, I think I can clean up the mess that we have there. As a matter of fact, the judicial decrees themselves indicate that the old system has gone, and we're now all we're really vitally interested in is an open, honest administration, and I don't think it takes a century to have that. I think that 4 years is more than enough.
Barbara, good evening. You're on with Bernard Epton.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Epton.
Good evening.
My name is Barbara Thomas, and I live on the west side, 29th Ward, where Alderman Danny Davis presides.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen you or any of your representatives in my area. That would cover the 27th, the 28th, and the 29th Ward. We're on the west side,
mm-hmm.
and I'm concerned that I haven't seen anything from you.
Well, you have a right to be concerned. I've been in the car and driven to every meeting I've been invited to, and some perhaps where I haven't been invited, and I can't honestly tell you what street I stopped or where I didn't stop, but as far as the west side, I have been there. I certainly am well aware of the problems, the desolation, the needs of the your community, and I have every intention. I have said time and again that a lot of people consider it rhetoric. I don't. I think that Chicago is composed of many wonderful neighborhoods, and I think that some of them need more help than others, and certainly the west side under your present in the various wards. Perhaps the aldermen haven't been doing the job that they have. I intend in my administration, I owe no allegiance to any of them. I come in completely unencumbered, and I hope to see to it that you get the services and the facilities and the build-up that you deserve. But if I fail to visit you and your community, it hasn't been intentional. It's a huge city. I have gone wherever my schedule has covered, and I believe I've touched the west side in several points.
But in reality, since the basis of politics is going where the ducks are and seeking out votes, isn't it a poor investment of your time to try to get votes on the west side or south side when in reality you probably wouldn't have many votes there because of the way that this campaign has been divided?
I don't think any question the lady is right. There's no question that I haven't put in the number of appearances in there that I have in other areas where more votes were available. Obviously, when I went to 63rd and Cottage, I didn't get a very great welcome. Even when I went to my old Hyde Park area, I went to South Shore and Chatham, I didn't get such a great response. By the same token, in Woodlawn, I did get an excellent response, which surprised me. The fact is that there's no question, just like Harold, most, as a matter of fact, I have to say this, probably the most gracious response I got was at the Church of Good Shepherd on 54th in Indiana, where...
Is one of the concerns at the moment, though, with your campaign strategists, that if you were to make an appearance in a black neighborhood, that there would be fear that something might happen in retaliation to what happened on the north side at St. Paschal's?
Strangely enough, just the reverse is true. We've been fearful of making certain appearances in some white neighborhoods, large rallies, for fear that we could create controversy. We know that there are certain areas where black people aren't welcome with open arms, and I've purposely avoided large rallies in that area. As a matter of fact, just tonight I went to an area, and Hispanic area. I got a very fine reception, but there were people who drove by and said very vocally, "We don't want any racists in our neighborhood. Get lost." So that really, you try to avoid the controversy. You try to avoid creating situations. I certainly. Perhaps this isn't the appropriate time to say it, but I certainly didn't go around the country decrying Chicago and suggesting that we were an enclave that hadn't come into the 20th century, or that Chicago is a terrible place to live, or that Chicago has a mean spirit. I think that that's not the way to unite a city, and I think that perhaps the congressman was somewhat intemperate in his remarks. But obviously, he's a human being, and he's excitable, and... he's lost his temper.
Earlier in the program, I asked whether the footage of the incident at St. Paschal's used in current commercials by the Washington campaign perhaps might be exacerbating the issue. Your reaction to that? Do you think that that's pandering to trying to use the St. Paschal's incident for political gain?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I was very upset with that for any number of reasons. In the first place, the initial reaction by my opponent and even by the former Vice President of the United States was that I was a party to it, because some people were carrying my banners. You're talking about a very small segment of a very fine parish. They came there, they disrupted them, whatever their reasons were, and certainly I disapproved of it, and I indicated immediately that I was appalled that anybody would disturb anybody at worship. But the fact is that that was used to show that I was running a racist campaign. I had no control over it, and yet the innuendo made by my opponent was that I had certain apologies to make to the parish and to the priest. I don't know how I can apologize for something which I condemned.
All right, let's move on. Good evening, Angie. You're on the air with Bernard Epton.
Good evening. I have a statement to make that I'd like to direct. Of course, Mr. Washington isn't there anymore, but it pertains to both candidates. I'm a suburbanite, so therefore will not be able to vote. However, I know how important Chicago is because the suburbs have so much to do with Chicago.
You're to be congratulated for that. A lot of suburbanites don't realize that.
Well, let's face it, hand in hand, we all go together.
Good for you.
The thing that concerns me most, and I really disagree with your first caller where she said the past does not make have anything to do with the future, because, see, when I decide who I would vote for on a national level or local level, I like to look into the past because I feel history is the only way we have of foretelling the future. In Mr. Epton's case, some allegations have been made with regard to conflict of interest, and I followed very closely in the newspapers trying to find out and make a judgment for myself what they were. In Mr. Washington's case, his income tax problems have been largely touted.
What specific question do you have? I mean,
my specific question is this. What has Mr. Epton done that, with regard to his insurance business while he was a legislator, which was, in fact, considered a conflict of interest?
All right, let's give him an opportunity to respond.
I'm certainly glad you asked that question, because the charge was made time and again. Let me first say this. I'm sorry that I've been successful in business. If it makes my opponent happy, I'll try and go through bankruptcy. But the fact remains that when I was in the legislature, I did have expertise in that area, and a editor of a Bloomington paper, the Bloomington Pantograph, took issue, suggested that I shouldn't be in that official position. I should mention that my law firm represented these insurance companies for many years before I got in Springfield, and incidentally, my wealth is revealed on my ethics statement, shows that I got my money through capital gains, through sales of stock, and had nothing to do with insurance. But let me simply say that after I called this editor, we happened to have a light day in Springfield, and I called the editor of the Bloomington Pantograph, and although he didn't concede that I suggested to him, would it be better if I served as chairman of the farming community? Should I tell the farmers how to till their land? He finally came out with an editorial, and if I may, Bruce, quote him. He said, well, Mr. Epton called us the other day. It was a mutually valuable exchange of views, we think. We were persuaded that, in Mr. Epton's case, the circumstances are positive ones for the public. He has sponsored bills which have made insurance companies writhe as well as applaud, and his private interests are fully disclosed. As a matter of fact, one of the insurance companies was so indignant over one of the bills that I filed and passed that they fired me as their lawyer, so that the constant innuendo that I am the puppet or the tool of the industry is completely erroneous. And the strange part about it is that Harold was my colleague down there and knows better, because I would give him amendments to put on bills that would hurt some of the insurance companies because I didn't think they were dealing fairly with the inner city of Chicago.
All right. On the subject of your relationship, again, you represented adjacent areas for over 10 years.
Yes.
What was your relationship, the two of you down there? Were you friends at one time?
Well, we weren't friends in the sense that we went out together, or we dated together, or we went to movie, but we certainly called each other by first name. We certainly exchanged views on bills. Many times I would discuss a bill with Harold, and frequently I would give him amendments on bills that I thought would be particularly helpful to the people of the inner city, and I thought that it would help him, also help me pass the bill. And these were bills which were, matter of fact, when he talked about redlining, I was the first one to fight redlining in the General Assembly, while Harold suggests that he takes full credit for it. As a matter of fact, he wasn't even aware of it until 4 years after I passed the first bill.
Barry, good evening. You're on the air with Bernard Epton.
Good evening, sir. I have a question about the festivals that Chicago has. You know, are you for them or against them, such as Food Festival and Chicago Fest and this and that?
I hate to give you a vague answer. I know politicians generally try and avoid, but all I can tell you is that, one, I believe that certainly there's enough gloom and doom in this city without taking away some of the pleasures we get. The important thing, however, is that I haven't seen any of the contracts, and I would have to know primarily probably two things. One, are they being conducted by Chicago concerns, and are they hiring Chicago people? I would also like to know if they're costing the city money. If the answer to that is that Chicago people are being employed and that Chicago is making money, I would be entirely in favor of it. Certainly the Neighborhood Fest, I think, should continue. The costs are minimal, but the fact remains that we have to take in consideration, particularly with our financial crunch, can we afford, for example, we get $500,000 from the state of Illinois. That's a substantial grant which might be well utilized elsewhere. In answer generally to your question, yes, I favor continuation of the fest, but only if they aren't costly to the city of Chicago.
Very good.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got to move on. Annette, good evening. You're on the air with Bernard Epton.
Hello. I would like to ask Bernard Epton, as I hear that he only wants to serve as the mayor of the city of Chicago for 4 years, don't he think it would take longer to help the wounded city?
Not really. As a matter of fact, I think that you have to give more credit to the people of Chicago than that. The fact is, and I should know as a member of the Jane Dent Home for the Aged, the oldest black home in the state of Illinois, it's wrong to indict either black or white with hatred. Most of them are people of goodwill. I think that this campaign has unfortunately brought out the worst in some people, but they're a small minority. I think that the biggest problem will be to untangle a financial crisis. I think that people of goodwill can sit down, and I think just by virtue of the fact that in my administration, you'll have people of all races, all creeds, and I'm not talking about at menial tasks, I'm talking at the cabinet level, certainly will indicate that my intention is to make it one city. I certainly hope that it will take not 4 years. I hope we can do it in 4 days or 4 months. I realize it's a problem, and I certainly don't for a moment minimize it.
Okay. Would you say that easing the racial tension in this city is the first priority of whoever is elected mayor?
Unquestionably. Whether it's Congressman Washington or myself, there's no question. We have to make the people realize that not only is politics gone, partisan politics gone, but bigotry has no place in the city of Chicago on either side of the fence.
Michelle, good evening. You're on the air with Bernard Epton.
Yes, Mr. Epton, I have two questions for you. First, if you get elected, what are you planning to do about the patronage system?
I've indicated, as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing wrong with the patronage system. What's wrong with it is the abuse of the patronage system. By that I mean someone in the past has had to come in with a letter of endorsement from their alderman or their ward committeeman. That not only will no longer exist, not only because I say so, but the federal court have made it very clear that that cannot be the way. So that whether you call it patronage or whether you call it civil service, it's coming down to the same thing today. People will be hired or fired only based upon their ability or inability to do the job.
Oh, thank you. And my second question is, if you're elected, what are you planning to do about the racial riots that are going to be coming out about the election?
Well, your question, I will take the moderator's prerogative here and say that that's an inappropriate question. Marion, good evening. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm a college student, and I have noticed that Epton has used, throughout his campaign, he has talked about Harold Washington's tax failure to file. And I also noticed that Harold Washington has not one time talked about his mental case, which I would have to respect Harold Washington for doing that. Also, I have a couple of things here that I think is very important for this election.
All right, let's let Mr. Epton respond to that characterization.
I'm not sure that mental case is the correct word. The fact remains that my medical history has been brought up and been divulged completely. I've agreed to answer any and all questions in writing fully. And as a matter of fact, I can only point out to you that, one, I've been on the campaign trail from morning till night with the news media following me. I've never missed a day from work because of any physical problem. The only time in Springfield that I went to the hospital was because it turned out to be exhaustion. Originally, Mr. Kay thought it was a heart attack, and my doctors and doctors in Springfield indicated otherwise. So that the fact that that Congressman Washington hasn't brought it up really isn't that important. Everyone else has.
Okay, let's move on. Lily, good evening. You're on the air with Bernard Epton.
Yes. I'd like to ask Mr. Epton something, and I think in this case I'm a fairly objective individual still attempting to make up my mind about things. First question I want to ask Mr. Epton is why he would embrace certain Democratic committeemen such as Vito Mizzullo et al., who theoretically should be diametrically opposed to him. On what basis does he find that they have something in common?
You mean physically embrace him or psychologically? Or
physically, literally, figuratively?
No,
politically.
Embrace. What is your common bond with these Democratic committeemen?
Actually, my common bond is that they all need me. Congressman Washington has indicated that that when he comes in office, they're all out. As far as I'm concerned, they're rather uncertain as to what I will do. All I can tell you is about Congressman Mizzullo. I go back a long way with him as a friend, not in politics. He's always been a Democrat, with the exception of the one time when he voted for the Republican president. But the fact is, Alderman Nicholas J. Bowling, who was my partner, was also in the city council, and he officed right next door to Vito Mizzullo. So that I know Vito by first name, and frankly, I just think that Vito was a great enough American. He felt that based upon the qualification, he voted for me. But when you say embrace, certainly I made no commitment to Vito. As a matter of fact, he asked none.
Why do you think they need you? You just said they need me.
No, I said they think they need me because...
Well, why do they think they need you?
Well, obviously, they feel that Harold has indicated that he's going to get rid of anyone who won't bend to his will. In my case, they know that in Springfield, I never hesitated to vote for a good Democratic bill, a good bill sponsored by a Democrat, or vote against a Republican bill that was not well thought out.
Given the wording of Shachtman 1 and Shachtman 2, though, isn't that a false assumption on the part of Democratic committeemen that really they really have nothing to fear? That
actually, you're absolutely right.
Job holders are not going to lose.
You're absolutely right.
So they're laboring under a misconception, the committeemen they're endorsing.
If that's what they're laboring under, I prefer to think that, and as some of them have stated, whether that's true or not, at least that's what they publicly stated, they feel that my background speaks better for the welfare of Chicago. And frankly, I think that in many cases, if not all, that's all they want today. They no longer have the fear that they had years ago of the patronage system.
Fred, good evening. You're our last caller of the evening. Go ahead with Mr. Epton.
Good evening, Mr. Epton.
Good evening.
You and Mr. Washington have both made statements of bringing business back into Chicago. And it's a pretty well-known fact that Chicago is one of the highest tax cities on business. How do you propose to do it?
Well, obviously one commitment I've made, which should be attractive to business, is that under no circumstances will I raise city taxes, period. Secondly, I've indicated that we will develop and proposing an economic development corporation, which of course will consist of 15 members coming from labor, industry, the neighborhoods, and of course all segments of the city, and hopefully with an executive secretary who will have 10 years tenure, which means that he or she will not be subject to any political domination. The other thing I hope to be able to do is to remove the head tax, which will be conducive to, I think, bringing in new business. And finally, we're setting up, there were 22 points in the platform that I raised, but one of the things that perhaps is most important to business and to all industry is a viable school system that can provide them with a labor force with men and women who can read and write and spell, and secondly, a strong police force.
Fred, on that note, we are out of time. Before you arrived in the studio this evening, I asked Harold Washington if there was a specific question that he wanted to pose to you. It turned into a rhetorical, hyphenated question. I will ask you as the closing comment this evening, what rhetorical question would you ask of Harold Washington?
Well, really, rather than a question, it's more of a plea. I would ask Harold that if I'm fortunate enough to be elected, and I'll make the same commitment to him, that he will join forces with me in healing these many wounds we've talked about. Ralph Otwell of the Sun-Times came forth with a suggestion, a paper that we signed, which may or may not have been effective. I was willing to sign it. Harold wasn't. I hope on reflection that I called Bill Berry and I called one of the outstanding Reverend Kenneth Smith. I would hope that these people will overlook any past differences and come together so that we can make Chicago the great city it should be.
Mr. Epton, we thank you very much for joining us on Straight Talk this evening, and I will ask you, as I asked Mr. Washington when he left, we hope that you'll be back on this program, win, lose, or draw at some point in the future to talk about the campaign at greater length.
Well, Bruce, you've always been kind, and you've invited me when no one else did, so I certainly can't turn you down.
Thank you very much for joining us. Our thanks this evening to not only Bernard Epton, the Republican candidate for mayor who has joined us in this past 45 minutes of our program, but the Democratic candidate, Congressman Harold Washington, who is with us for the first 45 minutes of the program. Thank you very much for joining us. Again, our thanks to our guests, our thanks to you for joining us at home, and a reminder, we will be back here next Sunday night at 10 o'clock, at which point we will discuss what happened next Tuesday at the polls in the city of Chicago. Our thanks to our director, Scott Wager. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night.
Straight Talk with Bruce Dumont has come to you live from Chicago and is a presentation of WFYR Public Affairs. Opinions expressed are not necessarily shared by the management of WFYR Chicago. Broadcasting from atop the world's tallest building, this is 103.5 FM, WFYR Chicago. The following program was recorded earlier for broadcast at this time on WFYR Chicago.
We've got many more people who recognize the need for gay rights.
We have.